Taylor and council members, thank you for your time. I grew up in Southeast Portland and have lived in South Burlingame for 29 years. I'm a registered nurse and have spent my career as a pediatric nurse. So the concern and welfare for safety of people has always been sort of my priority. So I'm here on behalf of our neighbors and the teen you heard about when Krista talked. I want to read a letter from his father. He couldn't be here today. Excuse me. I have lived for 21 years at Taylor's Ferry Road next to the proposed development. On this stretch, the speed limit is 40 miles an hour. Residents have complained for years about endless traffic accidents. The cars and motorcycles continually drive at 45 to 50. There is no sidewalk, bike lane, walking lane. It's hazardous. Despite the claims to the contrary, the applicant's counsel said there is considerable bicycle and foot traffic every day on this stretch of road. I've seen mangled bicycles, badly injured people on the ground, dead deer, coyotes on the side of the road, 4 snapped telephone poles, many cars off the road, and smashed fences. 2 years ago, on February 17th, my son got off the TriMet bus coming home from school using his Wilson High School bus pass. After exiting the stop in the dark and the rain, he tried to cross 3 lanes of traffic and was hit by the cars. There was no provision for safely crossing Taylor's Ferry Road. He spent the next 3 months in the hospital, and his life will never be the same. The pain and heartache that our family has endured cannot be put into words. I appeared at the public hearing on October 16 and explained this to the hearings officer. As an expert in data analysis with a master's degree in mathematics, I also submitted documents identifying the fundamental methodology flaws and factual errors that the impact study had that was submitted by the applicant. The hearing officer brushed aside the clear recommendation of PBOT against the McAdam Ridge development. So I'm asking the City Council to consider the health and safety of our children and deny this application. Sincerely, Michael. Excuse me, Baronell, Skate. And as a mother and as a nurse and as a concerned citizen, I'm asking you to deny this application for safety reasons. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for your testimony. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Council. My name is Scott Richmond. I'm a resident of South Burlingame. I've been for about 15 years, and I'm our neighborhood association's representative to the Southwest Neighborhood Inc.'s Transportation Committee. I'm also on our neighborhood net team, as Marilee Carr spoke earlier. I'll keep this brief, as others have voiced concerns that I plan to raise regarding transportation, in particular about my concerns about the deficiencies, the current deficiencies of Taylor's Ferry Road, the closest arterial that will directly serve the proposed development. The developer applicant in their favor has case law precedent that they cited about disproportionate exactions, and so the city is somewhat hamstrung in terms of how much they could burden, so to speak, the developer with what the developer is saying are potential offsite improvements. But I would encourage you to not approve this application in large part, in addition to the concerns raised earlier about environmental hazards, landslides, and so forth. Just about the inadequacy of the transportation infrastructure, the developer is proposing, at least considering, has a condition to improve a TriMet bus stop, a pad that would serve one direction of the Route 43. It wouldn't do anything to address the direction of travel from the development to downtown through McAdam and John's Landing into downtown using the 43 route. That would be considered an offsite improvement, but I urge you to strongly consider the current deficient system, including Taylor's Ferry. And as Marilee noted about the future residents of such a development and us needing to respond to them in the event of a landslide, I'm also very concerned about a lot more flashing lights from ambulances, paramedics, and so forth because of the risk that we're taking on by approving additional travelers along Taylor's Ferry Road at that location. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next three are Shannon Hiller-Webb, Dave Hennington, and Robert Lennox. and they'll be followed by John Holderness, Michelle Lennox, and Carol Hazard.
May I request that I stay here because I have to control my own media, which is a video?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, great.
So, Mayor, this is the city attorney speaking.
Wait a minute, not so fast.
The one of the things that's difficult about the PowerPoint is that in terms of looking at the hearings officer's decision to determine whether these materials have been previously submitted, if somebody is having slides associated with their testimony, I would appreciate if they would identify whether those materials were submitted before. I mean, for example, the emails that were submitted and the KGW article, I don't have any way of looking at the hearings officer's decision and the list of exhibits to determine whether those were previously submitted.
May I follow up with that?
You may.
We've cited all of this referenced in our PowerPoint and various documents where they've been introduced into evidence or where we're relying on city council recognized and approved ordinances. So you would like us to identify when it was introduced into evidence, if at all possible, each time?
It would be useful, but if you don't know, we'll end up having to figure it out later. But.
Okay. Well, happy to be helpful.
But for instance, with that newspaper article just saying this was submitted to the hearings officer, that would be what we would need.
And in that case, that was submitted with Michael Barrineau's testimony on October 30th. It was...
Wow. No, I don't need all that. That's just tell us. Yeah, that's perfect. Thank you.
Okay.
Good job.
Thank you.
What time of day was
it? What was the weather?
I'm happy to find that out for you. Okay. So if you just give me 1 second just to get my media set up. Okay. My name is Shannon Hiller-Webb, and I have lived in South Burlingame for 33 years, and I'm a native Portland resident. I want to state my position is that I support development in our city, but just not at all costs, and this development harms valuable identified resources and risks the safety of my current and future neighbors. I come to you today having carefully considered this project. I ask that you respect that 5 of 7 of your bureaus denied the McAdam Ridge application, and I believe the hearings officer erred in his decision in applying multiple codes. I would like to share a video of the area we are discussing that I introduced to the hearings officer with my oral testimony on October 30th. As the video plays, I would like to share how the land has been characterized, demonstrating its value by BES and the Southwest Hills Protection Plan. One second. Sorry, technical difficulties to transfer. Okay. This isn't the... We loaded this video. There we go. The forested Southwest Hills form a backdrop to the city, and their destruction would result in loss of identity, uniqueness, character, and value. There are 130 plant species that include Douglas firs, western red cedars, Pacific dogwoods, as well as protected Stevens and Ruby's Creeks that are critical to endangered Chinook salmon and steelhead trout migration. In addition, there are 31 mammals and 74 nesting bird varieties, including the northern flying squirrel, the only flying squirrels found in North America. Bird species observed include great blue heron, cedar waxwing, golden eagle, red-tailed hawks, owls, and ducks, pileated and downy woodpeckers, which are native to Portland and the largest woodpecker native to North America, are found here. Mammals in the area include mule deer and foxes. In addition, the forest mutes the noise of highways I-5 and 43, absorbs some air pollutants caused by audio and industrial emissions, and moderates climate extremes. The forest cover is in its second growth stage with a 70% deciduous and 30% coniferous composition. Red alder and bitter cherry are common associates of the maple. Several unusually large specimens of Pacific dogwood and cascara are present, and the understory shrub story provides wildlife food and cover. There are 6 perennial creeks, including Stevens Creek. This site has important visual resources. The tree-covered condition of the site contributes to the neighborhood character. Because of the relatively high ridge elevation, broadness, and tree cover, this ridge is an important feature of the West Hills and the surrounding region. This entire 4.6 acres will be clear-cut to make way for homes, and 478 native trees ranging between 6 and 54 inches in diameter will be sacrificed. Simply put, once destroyed and built upon, we will never recover the functional value of the environmental ecosystem and the habitat loss.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Council and Mayor. My name is David Hennington, and I'm here today to present my perspective as both a human and as an individual educated and trained in environmental sciences and land use planning. My hope is that this will help convince you to reject the approval issued by Mr. Odenor. As a human, I have lived immediately adjacent to this impressive, intact, temperate rainforest for nearly 8 years. I have seen and heard dozens of wild animals, such as those listed by Shannon previously. I have also seen and heard the terrestrial mammals that face the daily struggle of navigating the increasingly rigid and dangerous confines of our man-made landscape, such as deer and coyotes. Hiking nearby at night, aided by a headlamp, I have seen the watchful, glowing eyes of multiple coyotes wary of my presence. There is no doubt that this is truly a wild place, and as a human, I am compelled to speak up in defense of it. As an individual whose education focused in large part on urban forestry and whose professional experience includes reviewing and residential and commercial tree plans, I see a large, intact urban forest composed of hundreds of significant native specimens, some of which can be clearly classified as old growth and many others as second growth. Looking at the plans, I see an outdated approach that assumes a clean slate is best practice and disregards the functional values of the trees it so callously disposes of. You've heard the 478 number on the mature trees. I'd like to point out, in addition, 59 native trees of 21 to 25 inches at breast height, 19 of 26 to 30, and 53 above 31, including one that is 54 inches. These are all trees that are likely to be at least 100 years old, and the biggest one is estimated to be around 270. As shown in supporting documentation, the site is a critical link as part of an established wildlife corridor. This whole part really stuns me. So BDS staff have determined that the most recent version of the submitted application does not adequately address a lengthy list of critical environmental review approval criteria. And, you know, there's a quote I've added that basically just shows that's the case. And so with these facts and with the obvious criticality of this mature temperate rainforest habitat in mind, I am shocked that this proposal could have so casually been approved. I call on you as passionate leaders of our community to defend the laws, policies, and plans of our community. I call on you to defend the processes and labor of the professionals within your bureaus, and I call on you to right this wrong and overturn Mr. Odenor's approval. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Council members. My name is Robert Lennox. I'm the president of South Burlingame Neighborhood Association. I'm also a professional land surveyor. I've been practicing for about 20 years in the state of Oregon. I'm going to get into code. So approval code, criteria code 33-430-250.A4C talks about design including building sites, vehicular access, and utilities within the resource areas of a conservation show must have the least detrimental impact on identified resources and functional values as is practicable. Significant different but practical development alternatives, including alternative housing types and reduction in the number of proposed and or required lots, may be required if the alternative is less impactful in the environment. So as described, the north half of this site is encumbered by two creeks. It also has a portion that's a landlocked upland forest that they've called out. It's also somewhat of a remnant parcel where encroachments or development has happened on multiple areas, so it's a really unregular shape, making it very hard to develop. Basically, the proposed area is focused on the south 4.5 acres of the property. The Southwest Hills Protection Plan lists resources and include many things, but two to note are the ancient mapland site and the trees to the southern side of the parcel near Terry's Ferry, which includes the 54-inch diameter tree. So what we have here is a look at the evidence that have been put into record. This has been put in by their attorney. The first four are the alternatives that were submitted with the application. 4A is the preferred, and the rest of them were submitted at the time of the hearing. The next slide is basically just zooming in on them and making them all the same size. This slide basically highlights the lots, and it highlights the roads. This is the proposed area of impact. This is what we're talking about. The first two, these two that we have access through, the applicant said that they weren't practicable. One of them was designed in 1840. It ignored all topology, ignored all the streams, ignored everything. The other one had a bridge going over the protection zone and wasn't practical to build. The remaining ones we're going to show here as they overlay on the screen basically follow the same design. They basically discount everything on the south side of this creek, all the trees, the 505 trees, the everything else that's down there. You'll notice that there's no proposal of innovation and planning. There's no multifamily condos done. There's no cluster homes. It's very intensive, and it's very very hard on the upland forests. So basically, the analysis was basically reduced, as our attorney said, to percentage of lots in an area. So we felt that Old Norr failed in his application of this code to require multiple alternative analysis.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Next three, please.
Are John Holderness, Michelle Lennox, and Carol Hazard. And they'll be followed by Roger Zumwalt, Linda Meyer, and Seth Dryden.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Mayor, City Council. My name is John Holderness. My wife and I live on Ruby Terrace in South Burlingame. We particularly value Portland's green spaces, and we hike on the city's trails regularly. I'm a retired technical writer. I'm also a net volunteer. To save time, I'm leaving out some details that I included in the written version I sent you earlier today. I'm here to state my view that the hearings officer, Mr. Odin Orr, did not correctly apply City Code 33.430.250 and 33.630, as most of his findings directly counter the expertise and code requirements outlined by BES. I'll be focusing on two valuable resources, Stevens Creek and the 54-inch Douglas fir on the site. The city has invested over $1 million to improve stream conditions on Stevens Creek by repairing a sewer line along the course of the creek, reconstructing the stream bed, and restoring native vegetation. Groundwater mitigation is absent in the plan for this development, and therefore Stevens Creek and the city's investment are at risk. There's also, as you've heard, a 54-inch diameter Douglas fir tree on the site. It's estimated to be over 200 years old, maybe 300. It was here before Lewis and Clark. Due to an oversight on the applicant's part, the city didn't notice this high functional value tree at first. The applicants claimed the tree could not be saved because the city's comments came late in the review process, essentially blaming the city for the applicant's error. The applicant said it had to be cut down because to save the tree, they would have to redesign the subdivision, and the cost of redesign was too high. But there's no way to put a price on this tree, the largest and therefore the highest functional value for habitat of all the trees on the site. The code requires that this site, with its protective environmental overlays, be developed first and foremost with sensitivity to the high functional value of all the assets within the conservation zone. Code 33.430.A1A says, quote, trees that are healthy, native and non-nuisance species, 20 inches or more in diameter in tree groves are the highest priority for preservation. The hearings officer failed to apply this code correctly in his decision to approve the application. This was an error. We ask the council to protect the Stevens Creek watershed and preserve this tree. I request that you overturn the hearings officer's approval on behalf of this watershed, this tree, and we, the local citizens. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Perfect timing. Extra credit. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mayor Wheeler and City Council members. My name is Michelle Lennox. I am a property owner that is adjacent to the ravine that supports Ruby Creek. I've been a resident there for 23 years, and I support the South Burlingame Neighborhood Association's assertions. The hearing officer erred in approving this application because it does not meet the Southwest Hills Resource Protection Plan policies. in particular Environmental Code 33-430-250A1 and Code 33-632-100, requires this project be suitable for development in a manner that reasonably limits the risk of landslide affecting the site and adjacent sites. The hearing officer erred by not requiring the applicant to identify the upland forest located in the southerly region, which happens to be the area of primary disturbance, as a functional resource and value from the beginning. He failed to consider forest ecology as one of the key functional resources that must be preserved. To quote from Southwest Hills Regional Resource Protection Plan, "The balanced relationship between the area's geologic formations, soil, and groundwater features is protected by the extensive canopy cover and root system of the forest, which shelters and stabilizes the hills and slopes. Activities which disturb this fragile relationship can substantially degrade resource values by causing landslide, flooding, erosion, and sedimentation. By stabilizing the soil and reducing runoff and erosion, the forest protects the community from landslides. Resources should be understood as interconnected strands of complex ecological webs. The interconnectedness of the trees and the roles they play in this forest for absorbing water cannot be overstated, particularly because we live in a rainy climate. To clear-cut the trees does not protect them as a resource. It destroys them as a resource. The landslide cannot be engineered to never slide again. The development is proposed over an existing landslide. It's not if, it's when it will slide again. 17 families live uphill from the proposed area, the disturbance, and within the known landslide zone. The city should not allow 21 more families to be located in this zone. It's too much of a risk. The hearings officer approved this application is in error for the reasons I've stated. I ask you to overturn the hearing officer's decision. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
Carol spoke earlier, so we can probably go to the next three.
Very good. Thank you.
Next three are Roger Zumwalt, Linda Meyer, and Seth Dryden.
I'll try to pick that up.
And they'll be followed by Jim Hussey, Lee Cannon, and Scott Burns.
Do the slide.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Roger Zumwalt. I'm a South Burlingame resident, and I'm going to try to pick up a couple pieces that just got cut short. First off, speaking to the PACE engineer, the last 2 points on his was that you made multiple inaccurate statements, which I don't know that could be verified. I don't believe it was true. Second, I request you cease and desist in your efforts to misrepresent our development. Basically, he was threatened with a lawsuit, so he said, I'm not doing this because I'm not going to make enough money to bother covering this. So that's that part. Next up, we got a little bit of a sink in our slides here, but I think that speaking for Carol Hazard, these were the issues that have to do with what creates landslides, what triggers them in virtually all cases of the type ancient landslide stuff. So we're talking about not holding water, which you've heard, adding a load, putting heavy soil, more soil on there or fill, especially on steeper slopes. I mean, that's just physics. We all get that. I'll skip the next one and said, avoid excavating on or at the base of steep slopes. And that's a concern that will come up again in our conversation. But there's a nice graphic there that illustrates what's caused many slides, many slides in our city. So to my testimony, what you're basically going to see here is three slides that follow. They're from RiverTech's geological report of January 2017, figures 1 and 3. It identifies an ancient landslide, and it shows the existing nearby homes in purple. Slide one, I guess I just hit that. Slide two overlays the two with the development shown in red. Slide three shows that, sourced from their report, enlarges the landslide, and it highlights the landslides in brown, a light yellow, a gold, which is the beginning of the slope, which is called the headscarp, and then the red are slide activations that have happened in the last 150 years. So to call it ancient and it's never active is not an accurate description.
Is this in the record?
This
was submitted before.
This was submitted by the applicant.
Thank you.
Yes. Let's see. I would point out that in their geological report, they call 81 and 82 don't matter because they aren't being developed. And that's a pretty close call. 82, if you see it here, is right on the edge of, well, it's actually, it's right on the edge of where one of the lots is placed. Then I would go to the bigger one in the center, lot 85, and you can see it just barely pokes in there, but the headscarp, the darker brown at the top, if that's where it started to break away, if it continues to break away, it touches several lots across the back. So I would say that this is landslide activity with no man-made disturbing influences. In fact, in this area, ancient landslides have reactivated here, and it looks safe or it's kind of okay is really not very reassuring. We have 17 families that currently live on this landslide, and the development position is 21 people that are really at the risk of catastrophic harm, which has been already reported. And I would add that there are multiple examples, current and in recent history, of ancient landslides activating again.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. I'm Linda Meyer. My family lives on this landslide, and I am concerned for the safety of all families who also will live on this landslide into the future. My piece is to talk further about the landslide hazard code. The code's purpose statement says that the approval must ensure there is limited risk of landslide recurrence. This has not been proven in the landslide hazard study, specifically as it relates to the problem of excess groundwater, which can trigger a landslide. The conclusion of that study states the development will not adversely impact Stevens Creek watershed or produce hazards to life safety. But after this, there is a very long limitation statement. It says, construction of the recommended drainage improvements for the groundwater problem associated with the project will serve to improve the overall slope stability of the site. It's our opinion that the risk of future slope instability in the development areas that have been modified by ancient landslide activity is low, assuming our design and construction recommendations are followed. The problem of groundwater is so significant that this report encumbers the conclusion statement with limitations that require mitigation for groundwater. What was the mitigation design? Trenches to collect groundwater with the utilities and between the development and the upland neighborhood homes. But what happened next? This mitigation, the trenches, they were removed in July, and no other mitigation for groundwater was created. And the natural mitigation, the trees that use up the groundwater that's there now, will be gone. No statement is made as to why no new mitigation is needed or created to replace the trenches that were the design requirement for the assurance of low risk. We conclude that the removal of the mitigation for groundwater invalidates the statement of low risk. This finding invalidates their conclusion that the building of this development will not harm the environment or the people on the land. The hearings officer failed to notice or discuss any piece of this critical plan change that endangers the lives of all citizens who will live on this land into the future. He then erred by determining that the code for landslide hazard could be met. The decision should be overturned for this reason. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Afternoon. Mayor and City Council members, my name is Seth Dryden. I own the property that directly abuts lots 3 through 8, along with my wife and 2 children. As a third-generation Portlander, I am proud to call the City of Portland my home. As a homeowner whose home directly abuts the proposed McAdam Ridge subdivision, I feel compelled to speak about the landslide risk that puts my family in danger. I am here to specifically speak to the Portland City Codes that were not applied to safeguard public and private interests. I feel the hearings officer did not provide an adequate review of materials before providing a narrative that served only one interested party. Other evidence points to the hearing officer not considering all the evidence in record. One example is that he did not reference evidence of a city-requested 2013 master's geology thesis overseen by landslide expert PhD Scott Burns that studied the Stevens Creek watershed. Odenor never referenced the serious issues raised that the watershed, and this is a quote, the watershed is prone to slope failures if the soil becomes saturated. They are all likely to fail. As part of this thesis, an avoidance area map was generated for groundwater infiltration that advised neighbors to avoid soil saturation, which leads to slope failure. This avoidance area entirely encompasses McAdam Ridge. Additionally, the hearings officer's findings did not entertain evidence that the Portland West Hills are composed of Portland silt, and the Southwest Hills Resource Protection Plan states on page 41, Portland Hills silt has important implications for land use and development. This silt becomes unstable when wet, and the potential for slope failure is particularly high after the winter rains have saturated the soil. Many sites in the Portland area have a known geology that is susceptible to landslides as well as steep slopes. Adding an abundant uncontrolled groundwater to the site further adds that risk. One of the slides that's been presented numerous times here is directly from a publication that is published by the Oregon and Washington state governments called the Homeowner's Guide for Landslides for Washington and Oregon. In that, you will see the water is heavy and pushes soil particles apart, which reduces the soil strength, increasing landslide risk. The same guide also states live tree roots strengthen slopes. I will remind you that over 500 trees are expected to be cleared as part of this plan. Plus, actually, I heard it was over 3,000 earlier. I believe the risk in this known landslide site is significant, and the hearing officer failed to apply the provided evidence in his findings. And there is insufficient water mitigation and did not address the applicant's changing approach throughout their application. We see the water clearly concentrated on the slopes, and we know there's a trigger for recurrent landslide. Water does not obey property lines. I believe McAdam Ridge application should be denied due to safety concerns not adequately addressed, appraised, or acknowledged by the hearings officer response, and I believe that my family's safety is at risk if this development is built as currently planned. Thanks.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
So, Mayor, may I ask Mr. Dryden and Ms. Heller-Webb to address a couple of items? I've provided copies of the materials to the applicant, and they've identified some things that they're not sure in the record, and some of those relate to your testimony. So I just want to deal with those as they come because there's so many pieces of evidence. So the first, the slide that you showed with the saturated soil, wet soil, dry soil, you said that comes from a homeowner's guide?
That was put into evidence by me. It's Exhibit 29,
that's
each 29.
Okay. So each of those is from the same.
Or it might be 30, yeah.
Second, there are a number of pieces of factual information, Mr. Dryden, in your letter, so I can look at them, and you just read that as your testimony, related to damage to a number of homes during the 1996 floods, a statistic about 76% of the landslides. Is that information, that data, already in the record somewhere?
That was, I believe, an outdated document that you were provided there.
We can strike that. We might have had clarity issues on that when we included it, so I apologize for that.
Okay. I'm going to suggest that in Seth Dryden's February 7th, 2018 letter, the paragraph beginning in February 1996, continuing for the next three paragraphs, with the sentence saying reduces soil strength and increasing landslide risk, I would request that that not be considered by council. We will consider that new evidence and reject that.
Without objection.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. We appreciate it.
Next three are Jim Hussey, Lee Cannon, and Scott Burns. And they'll be followed by Mike Andrews, Eliana Andrews, and Robin Harmon.
So, Mayor,
yes.
I apologize. We're hitting into a portion where I'm going to have a few comments. Before Mr.
That's
Burns
fine.
Testifies, I'd like to have a bit of a discussion with the testifiers about what information is appropriate and what is not.
That's fine. Would you like us to take a two-minute recess?
No. I before he testifies, I want to talk. I don't know which of you is Scott Burns.
That's me.
You are. Maybe I could grab him for a moment and just...
That's fine. We'll start at the other end of the table, and we'll work our way down. And if you could just step over and chat with the legal
right
counsel
now.
For a minute. Yeah. Thanks. Good afternoon.
James Hussey. I've been a resident of the South Burlingame neighborhood for 15 years. I had planned to speak about the landslide risk and the water drainage problems and how I felt that the house officer had not thoroughly addressed this and that a hydrology report at least was needed. All the points I was really going to make, I think, have been covered now, so in an effort not to be redundant, I'll just end it there.
Very good, but you're on the record in support of these positions, so thank you for staying so. Good afternoon. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Thank you for hearing us today. My name is Lee Cannon. I'm a licensed insurance agent for over 20 years in the state of Oregon. I'm here to provide information regarding to coverage for a landslide loss for families within and adjacent to this development. Bottom line, it's going to be very difficult, if not impossible, for these families to secure landslide coverage for their homes.
Excuse me, has this previously been submitted
to
the record?
Yes, this was submitted.
This was submitted in the Myers testimony.
Excellent, thank you.
Thank you.
Brilliant.
Okay. So it's, forgive me there.
Sorry, and just so people know why we're being sticklers, it's just because this is a formal evidentiary hearing, and so it's very important that we get all these details knocked down. So sorry about that.
Not a problem. So it's important to understand that landslide is a risk that's not covered under a homeowner's policy. So when you have insurance and a loss with a landslide, it's not covered under the home policy that you get. It's not available for coverage under the federally backed FEMA policies for flood. Typically, the only coverage that's going to be available is what we refer to as a difference in conditions policy. The other options, forgive me here. The other option is looking at our state and local governments, which we're doing today, and that's through our building and ordinance codes and approval to decide beforehand to protect its citizens if this is a safe place to develop is really the only recourse, and that's why we're here today. So some of the difficulties that these folks are going to have in getting coverage for this particular area is that, first, the homeowner is going to need to supply a self-paid-for geotech report for each of their properties. These can be very expensive. This is required before they can even get a quote for coverage, and there's no guarantee that they'll receive a policy in such a case. Additionally, this area has been identified as a high-risk landslide area, and most of the carriers will not cover this. The carriers we're talking about essentially are surplus lines, non-admitted carriers backed by Lloyd's of London. The structures are often required to be built on firm and natural ground. In this particular development, they're looking at potentially 20 tons of fill material, which will essentially bar those coverages, those new developments, from getting a landslide coverage. Should they somehow be offered a policy, we're looking at tremendously high premiums, very high deductibles, and very limited coverage. So bottom line, the homes that are newly constructed and adjacent to this property are going to have a very difficult time in getting coverage. Ultimately, when there is a loss, the homeowner is going to be left to face a lopsided battle against developers, engineers, and contractors, assuming they're still in business. And ultimately, it's you, the city of Portland, and we, the taxpayers, that are going to be looking at defending these costs and claims. That's why, in looking at today, we have a time through supporting this appeal to go ahead and protect those citizens. I want to take the rest of my time and introduce Scott Burns, who's a PhD chair in geology and professor emeritus at the Portland State University. He's worked in the field of geology for 47 years, 35 of which specializing in landslide and training geologists in this area. He's examined most of the significant slides in the Northwest, and he is broadly considered the foremost expert nationally and often appearing as an expert witness in landslide cases. Professor Burns has voluntarily offered his testimony as a demonstrating expert after reviewing the evidence in this case. His motivation is appearing for this egregious to defend those for this area so that we don't develop homes in this area to have families.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Appreciate your testimony. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, Mayor Ted and the rest of the council. Scott Burns, engineering geologist at Portland State. What does an engineering geologist do? Site evaluation is the heart of everything that we do. Before you build something, you want to know if there's going to be any geological problems, especially hazards. I led the team that mapped those 705 landslides that was mentioned earlier here, and last winter I visited 66 landslides here in the Portland area. and I'm not paid for this. I do this as reaching out, and I'm a free consultant for the City of Portland on anything to do with slope stability. I'm going to be focusing in primarily on the landslide and reactivation of the ancient landslide, which has been mentioned a lot before. This landslide is a big one. The scarp is 50 feet high. It's one of the biggest ancient landslides that we have in the City of Portland. And there are 9 houses that are actually on the landslide that are built right now. The project that is coming up, 21 additional ones. If that particular landslide reactivates, what will happen is those houses will be moving. It's not going to be like an OSO and a catastrophic one, loss of life, but the infrastructure is going to be hurt. One of the bottom lines that I talk about over and over and over again, landslides are not covered by insurance. And so those houses will lose if it starts moving, and then the 9 houses that are already on the landslide will also be a major concern. What's going to happen is it'll go to lawsuits. Who's going to get sued? The City of Portland and the developer. And my 35 years of research in the Pacific Northwest, one of my major important things that I've come up to the conclusion is building on old landslides because of the potential for reactivation later on. What are the two things that are going to make a landslide reactivate? They've been mentioned before. High water input and then earthquakes. We have the big one. The last one was 318 years ago. When we had the one 1964 up in Alaska, Turtigan Heights, 70 houses moved down as a result of that, earthquake. And then in the Pacific Northwest, we have many examples. And so if you want to know some of those examples, I will mention them because they are very important. Each one of those, the geotechnical report that came in before said this is stable. But it's the extreme events that we are not prepared for. Number one, huge rainfall events. And as the climate is changing, we're getting more of those. Secondly, the earthquakes. Are we prepared for that? And so as a result, those are some of the things that I wanted to mention there. I have read the report of the particular site. I know that two engineering geologists, geotechnical engineers, they are very, very qualified. So that was a very good report for what they had to do. I have concerns about putting 20,000 cubic yards of fill on there and then removal of all those trees. A tree is a natural pump. It is pulling water out of the ground and therefore increasing slope stabilization. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate all three of you.
Thank you. So before that group leaves the table...
Yep. Sorry. Wait.
Mr. Cannon, in particular, could you address? And I'm sorry. I'm pretty sure everyone's really annoyed with me, but this is a really challenging record.
Fine.
Trying to understand.
No, we all get it. No worries.
Mr. Cannon, in terms of the insurance information, the applicant is not aware that the information about homeowner's insurance. So, in your letter from the second paragraph. Basically through the end, that information is not in the record about insurance. Can you identify if that information has been placed in the record before?
Can you come to the microphone, please, so that the captioners can get it? Thank you.
That's included in my letter of November 5th, which I believe is 95.
Okay. Did you include evidence regarding the specific difference in condition policy?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Let's see. In terms of Mr. Burns' testimony, I think counsel, I would be very surprised if there was information in their evidence that Mr. Burns had made a statement about the quality of the engineers for the applicant. I would assume we should strike that, unless anybody's telling me that information is in the record. Okay. You did not go into any of the sites, the other pieces. The applicant, did you note anything else in there that would have been new information from Mr. Burns' testimony, or do you want to address that during your?
Could you come to the microphone, please?
If you wouldn't mind identifying yourself. Sorry. Thank you.
Commissioner Fritz and Mayor Wheeler, Chris Kobach. I represent the applicant.
On Mr. Burns' testimony, he's made a couple statements like the city has no liability and our experts are qualified. I think those are the same. So I just think they should be treated the same. I mean, if it's all coming in, I don't really object to it, but I don't think you should cut out some and keep the other stuff.
Okay. When we prepare findings, we'll just make sure we are consistent in treatment of those that piece of information. Thank you.
Good. All right. Thank you for clarifying that. Next three, please.
Are Mike Andrews, Eliana Andrews, and Robin Harmon. And they'll be followed by Robin Besse, Fred Hazard, and Mary Holderness.
Good afternoon. Would you like to start, sir?
Yes.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. It's a pleasure to speak before you today, and I appreciate your time. My name is Mike Andrews. I'm a resident of South Burlingame since 2001. The McAdam Ridge development should not be considered for approval at this time. The development proposes an increase in housing density on lots smaller than the R10 standard, minimal 10-foot front yards and razor-thin side yard setbacks, with nearly identical 40 by 40-foot building pads, with a probable building height of 30 feet. And I want to reference one of the documents from the consultant that states, building size is anticipated to be similar to the closest neighborhood lots on Ruby Terrace of about 2,800 to 3,000 square feet. How's my mic coming through? It seems
that's
like it's
fine.
Cutting out.
Yeah, okay. It's fine.
With limited time, I will focus primarily on two environmental modification concerns, minimum lot area and side yard setback. Zoning for the proposed McAdam Ridge development is R10C. See the zoning exhibit and preliminary site plan 4A. The subdivision is closest to the houses on Southwest Ruby Terrace to the west and within the South Burlingame neighborhood zoned R10.
Can I make a request? Just shove the mic about 6 inches away. It's really sensitive. And there you go.
That
perfect.
Better?
That's perfect right there.
The subdivision is closest to the houses along Southwest Ruby Terrace to the west and within the South Burlingame neighborhood zoned R10, illustrated in light yellow highlight. To the north is the South Portland neighborhood, which is also zoned R10C, where existing housing abut the proposed development. This proposed development is closest to the houses along Southwest Ruby Terrace within the South Burlingame neighborhood and include 10-foot side yard setbacks and 10,000 square foot lots. The R10 zoning is located to the south of the development. Both neighborhoods have R5 zoning. However, this zoning is much further away from the proposed development than the abutting houses in the R10 zone. The greater the housing density, the greater the subsequent impact to the environment, including trees and the existing landslide area. As a refresher, R10 zones have a minimum lot dimension of 6,000 square feet. The proposed development is pursuing 14 lots below the R10 standard. The staff reports that adjacent properties nearby to this development are R5, and that is not correct. It's R10. The nearby and closest properties are along Southwest Ruby Terrace. Smaller lots are not the only way to reduce the possible impacts to the permanent project resources, protected resources. This can be accomplished by simply reducing the number of proposed lots for the entire development and increase space between buildings. Additional testimony has been provided, and I won't be able to get to it.
Very good. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Afternoon. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. Thank you for letting me speak today. My name is Eliana Andrews, and I live in the South Burlingame neighborhood. I'm a student at Lincoln High School, and I am 15 years old. I was born and raised in Portland, Oregon, and I love trees and the environment. I will be speaking today about the lack of required street trees on this project. I'm requesting that the McAdam Ridge development not be considered for approval due to the failure to comply with the city code Title 11. I'm concerned with the proposed development and the lack of required street trees in the right-of-way near lots 3 through 11 and lots 15 through 20. The way it is currently designed, there are engineered storm water planter boxes instead of planting area for street trees. You can see the exhibit. Site Plan 4A does not provide adequate quantities of street trees on public street A. The street tree standards require street trees in the right-of-way for each full increment of 25 linear feet per side of street. Based off this requirement, there should be an additional 36 street trees and adequate planting area to accommodate their growth. Design 4A has not addressed the requirement for street tree planting, and the engineer had the opportunity to do so. This design should have been coordinated with the urban forester, but it was not. Nothing in the record demonstrates that the applicant or the project arborist consulted with the urban forestry staff regarding the options for the right-of-way design. Street trees not only make the street more livable, but will reduce the stormwater discharge and soften the vertical buildings. With the reduced front yards to 10 feet and public utility easement contained within them, adequate planting space is not available to allow the homeowners to plant significant trees in their property. The lack of adequate planting area in the private front yards strengthens the argument requiring street trees in the right of way. On a separate but familiar note, I'm very sad and very discouraged to hear that about 500 trees are intended to be removed from the site. This property is located almost entirely within a protected conservation zone. The removal of so many trees indicates that the engineer was not sensitive to the site and did not find a creative approach to take the existing trees into consideration. This proposed subdivision should not be approved as designed. Thank you for listening to my concerns.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Well done.
Ms. Andrews, I just have to say, I don't often get schooled on land use cases, and I had not noticed that point, so well done.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Robin Harmon, Mayor, Commissioners. My husband and I have lived in Portland for 16 years. I know a little bit about land use because I got involved with the Residential Landfill Committee project. I went to the first meeting, and then I went to the mall. I was called the 27th member of the committee. So I'm aware that there are often conflicting needs between owners, residents, and preservation. But I'm here today because this property has unique and irreplaceable value. Allowing this subdivision would endanger current and future residents and destroy the precious, critical natural resources that is vital to all of our well-being. Our neighborhood recognizes the need to keep pace with the growth of our city, and we welcome new neighbors. However, we also want to ensure that safety is a major consideration, as well as protection of our dwindling natural resources. As you know, city codes were established to protect the qualities that make our neighborhoods desirable and our city great. We ask that you adhere to those codes. These ordinances are for the collective good of our city. We are united in our defense of protecting valuable resources and safety. We've spent our time, our expertise, and our resources in this cause because we believe that we have a responsibility to stand up for what is right. The hearing officer's decision is flawed. He made a decision with conditions, which implies that burden of proof has not been met by the applicant. After 4 years, a consensus has not been reached, and the officer has deferred to the bureaus again, who have maintained they lack the necessary information from the applicant to make a determination. Odenor's decision lacked analysis and provides no clear definition of why he gave approval. Page 9 of the decision references neighborhood review, in which nine written responses have been received in support of the proposal. The next sentence reads, letters were also received from SBNA and Collins View Associations. After spending 4 years of dedicated effort, it was offensive to us that he made no mention of our opposition and no reference to the 56 letters received, nor the experts hired to offer their opinions. To that end, we are in support of accepted principles that define smart and balanced growth, mixed land uses, advantage of compact building designs, walkable neighborhoods, preserve open space, farmland, natural beauty, and critical environmental areas, and encourage community and stakeholder collaboration in development of decisions. That means not a dog and pony show, but listening critically to the concerns of neighbors and not having a deaf ear to it. We strongly recommend the City Council deny the application. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks all three of you. Next three, please.
Are Robin Bessie, Fred Hazard, and Mary Holderness.
This is the conclusion of SBNA's presentation, though.
And they'll be followed by Pat Dennis, Jay Jones II, and Carol Porto.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler, City Council. I'm Robin Vesey. I actually live north of this proposed development on Canby Street. Most of my yard is a conservation zone, some of it a protected zone. Although I agree with all the points that have been made thus far, I'd just like to give you a little history about the City of Portland identifying Stevens Creek that traverses this area as a significantly threatened and degraded waterway due to untreated runoff from impervious surfaces upstream. 40% of the Stevens Creek sub-watershed is covered by impervious hard surfaces, where runoff can lead to increased erosion, damage to the stream bed and its function, destruction of native species habitat, and additional pollution load on the Willamette River. Reducing the impact of this urban runoff is key to developing a healthy watershed. In 2004, the City of Portland identified protection of watershed areas with the highest remaining function and value as a cornerstone for effective watershed management and identified the Stevens Creek as an area worth protecting. In March 2006, the City Council adopted the Portland Watershed Management Plan to address these issues by identifying watershed health goals. It's because of this large development that there would be more associated hard surfaces and that would not be compatible with Portland's goals. I ask you to overturn the hearings officers.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Council. I'm a 50-year resident of Portland, and I ask that you do not allow for the building of this critical piece of natural land in our city. I ask that you deny the application. Thank you very much.
Ah, the beauty of brevity.
Yeah.
To the point. No mistaking your position.
Absolutely.
Sir, put your name in the record if you would.
I'm sorry. My name is Fred Hazard.
Good afternoon.
I'm Mary Holderness. I live in South Burlingame. I'm also worried about the landslide risk and harm to the environment from this potential development. Please reverse the hearings officer ruling and deny the application. Thank you.
Thank you. Next three, please.
Are Pat Dennis, Jay Jones II, and Carol Porto? And they'll be followed by Bob Solinger, Sydney Villanueva, and Brendan Appleberry.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners. My name is Patricia Dennis, and I live in the South Burlingame area. I agree with the speakers today who are asking you to reverse the ruling of the hearings officer. I also ask that you deny the application. Thank you for hearing us.
Thank you for being here. Good afternoon.
Hey there. My name is Jay Jones. I also live in South Burlingame on Ruby Terrace. I support everything that my friends and neighbors have attested to, and I would hope that you would approve our appeal and deny the applicant.
Very good. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Carol Porto. Me too. I volunteer and live in Portland. I serve as the Southwest Neighborhood Secretary. I'm the chairperson of the Public Safety Committee for Southwest Neighborhoods. And I'm on the South Burlingame Board and one of Merrill Lee's assistant team leaders on our NET team. So we have an active group of citizens who really care about Southwest Portland and South Burlingame and about our safety and livability. So please support the appeal and deny the application. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, all three of you.
The next three are Bob Solinger, Sydney Villanueva, and Brendan Appleberry. And then the last two will be John Lavielle and Maria Baker.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor. Commissioners, thank you for your opportunity. My name is Sydney Villanueva. I'm a resident of Burlingame, South Burlingame as well. It seems I may be the newest resident from today's testimony. And as I was sitting here, it occurred to me that I might be more reflective of the neighbors that are going to be moving into this area than the neighbors that I'm hearing and sharing concerns with today. So as you guys consider this application today, I just really would urge that you consider young families like mine moving into this area. I live up on 4th Avenue.